Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, May 17th, 2013. I am your host, Jackie McIntosh, and I am joined here in studio today by my co-host, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
And Cynthia Ganetra.
Hello.
Welcome. Animal Voices is Vancouver's and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and compassionate living radio program, bringing you all the animal and vegan-related news, events, interviews, lifestyle, and commentary you need to keep you up to date on what's happening both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. This program can be heard every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and is also streamed live at coopradio.com. And available as podcast on iTunes and animalvoices.org after airing. On today's show, Allison will share some stories about her childhood companion, Willie the chicken. We will be speaking with Laura Lee Shaw, an important voice for animal rights group Stop UBC Animal Research. Stop UBC works to spread awareness in an effort to end the cruel animal research that takes place at our own University of British Columbia. Laura Lee will also share some information about her adoptive hens that were rescued from battery cages and share some more information about this process. And we're shining a light on a very dark place in Canada. 15 whistleblowers, 4 mass graves, and a $1.5 million damage suit, and the second largest animal advocacy demonstration in Canadian history. I'm talking about Marineland Theme Park in Niagara Falls, one of the very worst captive animal facilities in the world. We will feature an interview with Wendy, an organizer with Marineland Animal Defense, and the grassroots group is gearing up for a huge rally on Saturday, May 18th, and their third year of focused campaigning against the atrocities committed by the park's owner. So we have a great show for you today, so please stay tuned.
Yeah, and as our listeners will probably know, if you're regular listeners to the show, it is International Respect for Chickens Month here at Animal Voices, but in the whole world,
yeah.
It's May. So that's why we've been talking a lot about chickens this month, if you've been wondering, and we've got some other chicken stuff on the show later today. So yeah, I wanted to share a story about my very first childhood pet or companion animal. That was a chicken named Willie. And when I was about 7 years old, my family adopted a baby black chick into our home who essentially became a pet to us, as we called her, or a companion animal. And we knew a couple on Vancouver Island who had chickens, and I believe one of their chickens had just hatched babies when we were going to visit them, and my mom had always liked chickens, so we took in this baby little chick to have into our home. My mom named her Willie because she thought she was a rooster, but then it turned out she was in fact a hen, but the name stuck. So, as I said, we treated Willie as a companion animal and certainly not like a backyard chicken that people in urban areas who keep chicken for eggs have. In fact, Willie wasn't a big egg layer, I remember. She did lay eggs sometimes. They're big brown eggs, but not every day like the genetically manipulated chickens do. And I know she wasn't genetically bred for factory farming because her lifespan went far beyond, you know, the typical 5 to 6 weeks that broiler hens, for example, are deemed to live. That if they're actually rescued, that's how long they'll live, I found out. So she lived for quite a long time. So you know, I was only a little kid, and so many of my memories about Willie are hazy, but I do remember some things, and I had my sister jogging my memory too. She's actually 2 years younger, but she remembers way more things than me. I remember that when she was a little chick, we kept her indoors, but when she became bigger, we would spend her whole day outdoors, essentially just enjoying life and being a chicken. We lived in a small town, but definitely not on a farm or anything. It was an urban environment. There were homes all the way up and down the street, and Willie basically had the run of the street, which is to say that all day she would either just spend on our property in our front yard or backyard in the garden, you know, scratching around, exploring, dust bathing, or just sitting down in the grass and enjoying the view, or maybe taking a nap. But she would also spend much of her day off our property, just doing her chicken thing, but on the lawns and the yards of our neighbors up and down the street. And she would generally never go beyond two houses to the left or right or and across the street. So whenever we wanted her, wanted to know where she was, we would just go looking for her then. And if we couldn't find her, it was fairly easy to locate her because all we had to do was go, Willy, 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 Willy. And she would just come running down the street from wherever she had been because she knew that our home was her home. And let's, like I said, she spent most of her time at our place, but she knew she belonged to us. She knew that, you know, she was part of our family, and she would always come home at night and go into our little chicken house on the patio. My mom would close the door, and that's where she would sleep at night. So, yeah, so, you know, there was just this, like, sort of free-roaming chicken on our street, and it was just known that in our town that, yeah, our weird family had a pet chicken. and you know, she was accepted by everyone, including the dogs and cats on the street, who just kind of left her alone, you know. Like, I remember, like, cats, you know, like, they're an animal that likes to prey, right? And I would see cats, like, you know, kind of like bent down and like trying to like eyeing her and that, but they would never actually do anything to her. You know, we'd take her on vacation as well. And in fact, like my mom, I think, would take her to the store and that, not into the store, but like we'd take her for rides in the van, right? We had one, minivans didn't exist back then. We had like one of those big empty black vans, but it was like my dad had done it up to be like a little house in there. And her favorite spot to sit in the van was on top of the closet that was right behind the driver's seat, so she would have a good view right above my dad's head when he was driving. And I remember once we got stopped, my dad got stopped by a police officer. So what do you think the police officer is going to think? He like comes over to my dad, and my dad rolls down the window and talking to my dad, and then this chicken sort of peers her head over and goes blah 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 blah. Anyways, I remember temperament wise, Willie, she was a really mean chicken. She would attack people that came to our door, strangers. And have you ever been attacked by a chicken?
No.
Well, I have lots of times. It's not fun. Like I could show you, but that's not very good for radio. But yeah, anyways, a few other stories my sister remember about, you know, she would eat spaghetti and like pretend to be killing it like it was a worm, like banging it against the ground. And sometimes my mom would feed her beer, and she would, apparently her face would go red when she drank little drops of beer. So my memories of Willie are very fond. And in fact, there were just so many awesome and funny adventures that we had with her, and I wish I had more time to share. I don't really remember a lot of them, but living in Chicken was just a normal part of my daily life, and having Willie was my very first introduction to having a personal relationship with an animal. And if people are interested in seeing a picture of me and my sister and Willie when we were kids, check out our Facebook page. I posted one there last night. Alice, it's Animal Voices Vancouver.
All right. Thanks for that, Allison.
Cool. And so events, this weekend is the Cloverdale Rodeo. So there's a Cloverdale Rodeo protest Saturday, May 18th, Sunday, May 19th, and Monday, May 20th. So it runs from 1 to 4 outside the Cloverdale Fairgrounds. As we know, rodeos are violent, cruel, horrific events where victims are bulls, horses, cows, and other farm animals. So please come to the protest, and you can bring signs, but they ask that the signs be children-friendly because there's lots of children there. So some suggestions for signs are animal cruelty is not entertainment, I like Buck the Rodeo, teach kindness to children, and real men are kind to animals. It'll be running all weekend. I'm going to try to go one day, and I know Jackie will be there all three
Jackie's
days.
Organizing
She's
it.
She's organizing it,
I'm
yes,
organizing
sorry.
It, I'll be there Saturday and Sunday. Monday, I won't be able to make it, but I encourage everyone to join. If you can just come from 2 to 4, just come there a couple hours, just make it out there and support these poor animals that are suffering.
Yeah, thank you so much for organizing that. It's great. And then also an event that Jackie is also part of on Fridays is this Friday, or every Friday now, is the weekly Chicken Vigil hosted by Liberation BC. So that's every Friday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. outside the storage facility and slaughterhouse on the corner of Commercial Drive and Hastings Street. So you were there again? Thank you so much. I was trying to go this morning, but I wasn't able to make
weekend.
It.
Yeah. No, it's... the amount of support we had today, we had, I think it was 12 or 13 people come out today, so it was pretty good, and a lot of honking and a lot of support, but of course you get those odd ignorant responses, but yeah, mostly supportive, which is nice.
Awesome. I really enjoyed, me and my partner really enjoyed it when we went, so we're definitely going to try to come out on Fridays and weekend. Yeah, that's awesome. And then another weekly event here in Vancouver is Fintastic Friday Nights, put on by Vancouver Animal Defense League. It's a shark fin soup protest every Friday from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. outside the Sun Sui Wa restaurant on Main Street on the corner of Main and 23rd. I've seen them protesting out a few times because I live close to there, and it's amazing. There's children, and I always want to join, but somehow Friday nights haven't worked for me. I feel like I'm making a lot of excuses for events I haven't been able to go to this week. But I know that they were protesting outside Fortune Garden restaurant for a long time and actually had them finally take shark fin soup off the menu.
So that's success.
So they've had success. So they want to keep protesting out there until shark fin soup is off the menu there. So you can check out their Facebook group, Vancouver Animal Defense, for more information. And then also next week is the Parrot Fundraiser on May 24th at 7 p.m., the amazing comedy hypnosis show and hilarious close-up magic show, benefited and presented by Greyhaven Exotic Bird Sanctuary and Parrot Resource Center. It features Canadian comedy entertainer, mind master Scott Christie, and comedy magician Rod Ross. There's an auction with over 40 items and a 50-50 raffle. And the cost is only $25. It's at the Columbia Center in New West across the Columbia SkyTrain. And tickets can be purchased at thecolumbia.ca, or you can check out Greyhaven website or theparrotresourcecenter.ca. So that sounds exciting. I haven't been to a comedy show in a long time, or a hypnosis show. I hear they're quite fun. So
for a great cause too.
And for a great cause as well. Yeah. And it's local.
Do I have time for
you
one?
Do,
one more? Okay. Perfect. So this one is from the States. It's the Resistance Ecology Conference, which is happening May 31st to June 2nd. It's a weekend event in Portland at the Portland State University in Portland, Oregon. And the cost is completely free. And we're actually having someone who's part of the conference on the show next week. So that'll be great. So you'll get to hear more information on the show next week. And then also, some more information can be found on their website at conference.resistanceecology.org. And it's basically a conference that looks at animal liberation and the intersections with other oppressive movements. So feminism, ecology, environment, and it just seems amazing. I wish I could make it, and I'm excited to hear next week to hear more about the show and more about the event.
That's in Portland, and I'll just be missing that because I'm going to be in Portland next week for another conference, the Vita VitaCom conference.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, which I think there's one ticket left if anyone wants to go. That's next week. It's for bloggers, so I think that's going to be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm.
And so if you have any other animal-friendly events that you would like announced on the show, please email us details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Go ahead, you can say it. Use the F word. We say it live on the radio. Maybe you've heard. Mondays at noon, we go for an hour. We talk about culture, gender, race, class, and power. We're bringing sexy back under attack. Cause it's about time folks started taking some flack for promoting a culture where you must be a pessimist if you want to speak your mind and say something feminist. But we know it's not true. From the truth you can't run. Feminists simply have so much more fun. If the trash that you hear makes you angry or bored, check out the F word at feminisms.org.
You are listening to Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And welcome. We're about to have Wendy Bones on. Marine Animal Defense, which is one of Niagara Animal Defense, is part of Animal Niagara Defense League, is entering the third year of a campaign to end animal captivity at Marineland, Canada's biggest water theme park located in Ontario. Last summer, the Toronto Sun published 2 damning articles exposing the terrible conditions and suffering of animals at the Marineland. Animal Voices spoke to Marine Animal Defense last August, just before their hugely successful rally, which drew over 800 demonstrators to the park. Today, Wendy Bones joins us to fill a few details about the escalation of tactics and about the opening day demonstrations, which is set to be the largest animal advocacy demonstration ever in Canada. Hello, Wendy, and thank you for being on the show today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Awesome, thanks. A lot has happened in the 9 months since we spoke to you last. I highly recommend that people visit your website, marinelandanimaldefense.com, to get fully caught up with all the developments. But I wonder if you could fill us in on a few of the key details. Let's start with the new fence and how that's changed the nature of the campaign.
Okay, yeah, so Marineland has built a chain link fence around the entire perimeter of their property. And they've built it since October 7th when like over 100 people stormed the park. So obviously they're building it to keep people out. They're saying it's for the protection of people inside, but what it really ends up doing is making the park look more like a prison. yeah, like the prison that it is, right?
Exactly.
So yeah, they've also put in plants along the fence, which are going to grow and then block vision into the park, which is unfortunate. But it hasn't really changed our campaign so much as it has just basically further defined the property line. We're still going to be out there demonstrating, and we're still, you know, getting out to the public. And the public has knowledge now of the terrible things that are going on behind closed doors. So, fence or not, people know that it's a bad place and needs to be shut down.
Well, that's awesome. I'm glad the fence is not getting in your way. And another Marineland in huge efforts to silence its critics has filed lawsuits against Phil Demers, a former trained turned whistleblower, and a $7 million defamation suit against Toronto Star. Let's talk about the $1.5 million lawsuit against Dylan Powell, one of the key organizers with Marine Animal Defense. What is the intention of the lawsuit, and how have you guys reacted?
Okay, so yeah, they tried to sue Dylan Powell, but the lawsuit was really just it's known as a SLAP lawsuit. Mm-hmm. So it's a strategic lawsuit against public participation. So they don't really aim to win. It's just a means of scaring away activists. But of course, we're 10 times stronger this year. But basically, like, the lawyers kind of just went back and forth for a while, and they ended up settling, of course, because they didn't really aim to win. And obviously, like, suing an activist, like, we're not rich people.
but we
do have to be very careful, because if anything happens, it just comes back on Dylan now. So even if he has nothing to do with, like, whatever might happen, like, we have to be very aware that they've targeted him as a cult leader for whatever reason, and that, yeah, if anything happens, it does come back on him. So, like, they're still sending messages here and there saying, like, the fence is up, so you know that it's there, and you know the plants are there, like, these little messages trying to warn us, but
as long as you're outside that the gates, they can't really say too much.
Yeah, as long as we're off the property, yeah, there's nothing that really they can do.
Well, that's good. And then another way Marineland on the defensive with its active PR campaign, I've heard they've sent out 7,000 letters to local corporations. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, they've for their new PR campaign, oh, it's amazing. In the last year, they've gone through so many people. They've had members of CASA, they've had employees of the park itself do their PR, but it wasn't really strong enough for them because they kept receiving bad press.
Mm-hmm.
So John Beattie is their new PR person. He was previously working for Dalton McGuinty, and he used to be the executive producer with CTV. So he's obviously they chose him because he has insider knowledge of news media and he has a lot of connections. But I mean, especially after the Toronto Star published that series of articles, it's they're really desperate to just give themselves a good name. They've been coming up with all these new, like, YouTube videos and happy little videos of the animals playing in the park and, like, Kiska, the orca whale, looking all happy, even though she's lonely and sad and sick. I don't know, John Beattie, you know, he's just said, like, oh, this is a democracy, so everyone's entitled to their opinion. But, I mean, I don't know how he feels comfortable defending that place.
Yeah.
But they've also lowered their admission rates, and for this Saturday, their opening day, because they know we're all going to be there. They've lowered their admission rates, and they're letting kids under 12 in for free. So they're really desperate. They have new billboards, new fence, new ads, new social media, but it's all I think it's all in the name of desperation, for sure.
Yeah, Wendy, we have the Vancouver Aquarium here, of course, and when you're talking about the ads, I see a lot of correlation there between Marineland and Vancouver Aquarium. You hear all these ads on the radio all the time of all these like really happy-sounding animals that are just like thrilled to be in their jail, right? And it worries me because I worry that the public are naive enough to believe this because it just sounds so convincing. Like, oh, you know, this orca whale or dolphin or whatever, so happy to be there. And it just sort of perpetuates the notion that it's a happy place to be. What do you think of these ad campaigns like that Marineland has put out? Do you think that they are so slick that the public is going to be convinced by them? Or do you think that people can see past them?
You know what? I can't compare it to any other park, but for Marineland itself, I know a lot of people who I've spoken with actually who have thought that maybe it was an okay place, and like they tell me, oh, I went there last year and I couldn't believe the conditions. It was deplorable, like bears, like swampy water, garbage everywhere. Like it just smells like rotting fish. And like so, people, you know, even if they are entering the park, most of them do see that it is like the animals are in very bad condition and they're all sick. It's a shame that they try and make it seem like they're doing these animals a favor by having taken them from the wild and having them in captivity and performing for people. But I really, like, I want to believe that people, you know, even if they do enter the park, that they see the truth.
It seems like, though, still a lot of people are going there. And I don't know how big the park is, but I read that on their closing day last year, 800 people went, despite the conditions that you've pointed out. So that that does still makes me worry.
Yeah, it definitely is worrying. Our aim, though, is to not only be there to demonstrate, but also to hand out literature. Like, we, you know, there's people, this is a convergence demo, so there's people coming from all over, like Canada, all over North America, pretty much, to demonstrate tomorrow on opening day. So, you know, we've been handing out literature and putting on, like, film screenings and just trying to educate the public as much as we can about issues surrounding animals in captivity and specifically about Marineland and the fact that the deers do have open wounds on them and that the animals, like the sea lions, are going blind and that their skin is falling off in the water and, you know.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
There was some new negative attention that came in December 2012 when there was media coverage about 4 mass graves on the property. Can you tell us about that development?
Yeah, so the illegal mass graves, I mean, they've always been there. And, like, people, you know, they have known, obviously, there's thousands of massive, massive animals buried there. It was reported to the Ministry of the Environment, and I think that they were investigating it. And I don't know if they've really released a lot of information of the outcome of it, but they're definitely like investigating it. So hopefully that's another strike against them, because it's not just an issue of like these animals being buried. It's because they're right close to the water source there, the river. So it's also an issue of pollution too.
Wendy, you're talking about mass graves. I'm wondering how many animals does Marineland actually have? And did you say deer? Like, is that what you said? Because this is Marineland. So maybe you can give us a picture of what Marineland, what kind of animals are being housed at Marineland.
Okay, so they have a bunch of marine animals. So they have Kiska the orca whale. They have some dolphins and sea lions. They also have land mammals, though. They have bears and deer and buffalo, so it's kind of like they have land animals and sea animals as well.
Okay.
There's different areas of the park, kind of with different themes.
So it's like a big zoo.
Yeah.
And so next Saturday, this Saturday actually, May 18th, is you're gearing up for your massive protest. So can you tell us a little bit about what's going to happen that day? And
yeah, for sure. We're very excited. So lots of traffic is going to be coming in and out of the park. Our main demo is from 12 to 2, but there's going to be people there all day, like literally busloads of people coming from all over the province. Our major focus for opening day is having young speakers. So we have Carrie. She's 13, from Niagara, and she actually had her school cancel visits to Marineland, which is amazing.
That's awesome.
Vijay is a young boy going for the Guinness World Record for the highest number of origami whales displayed. So he's been a big inspiration for this demo. He's given us a big focus. We've all been making origami whales.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so sorry, just grabbing some water.
No worries.
So his wish is to shut down Marineland, but to have a wish granted, you must make 1,000 origami of something. So last year on closing day, he had 1,000 origami whales. So we were kind of inspired by that, and we're going to have all the whales on display, and we're going to count them at the end of the day. Rick O'Berry is also coming, which I'm really excited
about.
That's fantastic. He's an ex-dolphin trainer. Now he's an anti-captivity advocate from the Earth Island Institute.
Oh, yeah, he was in
the
Cove.
The Dolphin Project, and yeah, he'll be speaking at the demo. So it's going to be lots of passionate, beautiful people. I'm really excited.
That's awesome. Unfortunately, obviously, we're here, so we aren't able to make it. But how can people who are also not able to make it, how can they help with the campaign?
Okay, so you can visit, if you check out marinelandanimaldefense.com, there's a lot of literature on there that you can print out and distribute to people on the street or leave lying around. You can watch the Maryland Animal Defense Facebook for news on upcoming demonstrations, contact us. You can petition to have your school not visit Maryland if trips are planned. But yeah, if you're out of the area, try and look for a similar venue in your area. Like you said, you have the Vancouver Aquarium Store. So, or any issues, you know, with animals in captivity. It's not just the sea animals.
Yeah, definitely. And later this summer, I see that you're helping to organize the first international Empty the Tanks event. We're actually having it here Saturday, July 23rd at the Vancouver Aquarium. Can you give us a few details about this event?
Yeah, so all over the world on Saturday, July 23rd from 12 to 2, there's going to be a bunch of different protests taking place at captive animal parks like SeaWorld, Marineland, other aquariums, places like the Netherlands, Australia, Canada, and the USA are all participating. So it'll just be a giant demonstration to protest animals in captivity and try and bring awareness.
That's great. That's awesome. We'll definitely do our best to promote it here on Animal Voices. Thank you so much, Wendy. Compliments to you and the rest of the Marineland Animal Defense team on what seems to be an amazingly organized strategic campaign that has made strides in such a short time span. The momentum is building, and it's clear that you're in it for the long haul. So thank you for your time today and for sharing the event with our listeners. We're wishing you an amazing day tomorrow and a record-setting turnout to bring international attention to the plight of the beings being held captive behind marine landscapes. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to mention something quickly, Cynthia, that Empty the Tanks event at the Vancouver Aquarium is actually happening on Saturday, July 27th.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's on Facebook. It's a long time from now, but we'll definitely be announcing it on the show later this summer, right?
Definitely, yeah. Yes.
Great. So news. So we'll start with some local news. It's exciting news. The City of Vancouver is declaring June 10th Meatless Monday. So the City of Vancouver is set to throw support behind an international campaign that encourages people to reduce their consumption of meat. The Vancouver Food Policy Council has let it be known that on June 10th, it'll proclaim Meatless Mondays. Their official proclamation will state, while livestock can be good for the environment and meat be good for health, excessive amounts can harm ecosystems. Obviously, we don't agree with that statement. But I mean,
why did they have to say that?
I don't know. There's no mention of the ethical complication. Obviously, the ethical reasons behind it.
Because they couldn't say, while you know, killing animal sentient beings can be good. Like they said for the other things.
Yeah.
Because it's not good.
No, exactly. Eleanor Boyle, who we've had on our show, was actually the reason behind the Meatless Monday. She did a talk for this group, the Vancouver Food Policy Council. So you can actually check out our interview with Eleanor Boyle on Earth Day on the environmental impacts of meat consumption on animalvoices.org. And just look for the April 20th show and you can check that out. And then also with the Meatless Monday event on June 10th, Liberation BC will be leafletting all day. And there's more information on their website about that as well.
Great.
Yeah. And then more local news. The Vancouver Sun published an article last Saturday called Mother's Day, Give Thought to Dairy Cows Suffering by Patricia Talman from the Langley Herbivores, who was also on our show recently. And that went really well with the fact that we had our Mother's Day show last Friday. And it was a great article. I actually recommend everybody to Google it and to
that was a really well
we should post
article.
It on our Facebook page. Did we? I'm not sure if we did.
I think we did, or maybe I just posted it on mine.
Maybe we can repost it. So I'll write that down.
Repost it. I'm just going to quickly read just a little excerpt of it because it was just amazing. She said, I'm referring to the 1 million dairy cows in Canada and the 265 million cows worldwide who are exploited for their milk our bodies do not need. Industrial dairy is based on a patriarchal system of subjecting females and treating cows and calves as commodities, akin to slaves. Cows are gentle and intelligent animals, yet they are regarded simply as machines. Their exploitation begins with forced impregnation and a device termed the rape rack. If this action is considered a heinous crime when inflicted upon humans, why is it acceptable for females of another species? Contrary to belief, cows do not give their milk to feed us. They must be kept pregnant through artificial insemination against their will, so they continuously produce milk for human consumption and profit. After being enslaved for 4 years, well under their natural lifespan of 20 to 25 years, they are sent to slaughter, where workers have witnessed cattle crying prior to being stunned by the mnemonic bolt gun.
That's so heartbreaking. We all know this, but I think like the more we can publicize that article in particular, like just get the word out.
Yeah, and it's just well written, and she's got facts and links to other websites, and so I think it's really well.
Vancouver Sun, is a very mainstream publication for people who don't know, who don't live in the Vancouver area. It's a premier newspaper, so that's really great for them to have that.
Really great. And then some happy news out of the States. Tennessee Governor Bill Haslam has vetoed the egg gag bill there. So, so that's really great. That bill obviously stops journalists from taking undercover video of the conditions in different ways animals are abused. And so he basically said that that this makes it more difficult to prosecute animal cruelty cases, which would be an unintended consequence of the bill. So he's decided to veto the bill, which is amazing because there's been a few states where the egg gag bill has passed, which is not good for animals. It only protects the farmers, which is a real shame. So happy news on that end.
Mm-hmm.
And then also locally in Canada, we discussed last week the Mercy for Animal Transit ads, which have started to run. So hopefully you've looked out for them and seen them around, the Why Love One and Eat the Other ads. And it's been getting great publicity all across Canada. The Vancouver Sun, again, has published an article about it.
Yeah, I saw that. It was fantastic. I thought the article was rather simplistic, but maybe that's okay for some people.
Yeah, and it just had the one view from the statement from Mercy for Animals. It didn't have, you know, farmers saying anything or any. It was just kind of what was going on. So I thought that was really good.
I think that's such a great campaign, especially in like any metro area, because there's so many transitors that are on the SkyTrains every day. And even the first time, if you don't see if that doesn't impact you, you're seeing it every day.
Oh, for sure.
You're going to be impacted by that.
People should check out the video that I posted on our Facebook page last week on how this campaign affected Toronto transit users. It's a really interesting video because it was done by Mercy for Animals, and they go around interviewing people to ask them what they think of the ads. And I'm pretty sure it'll be much of the same sort of gamut of views here in Vancouver. A lot of people were very reflective, and a few people were like, but I like meat, I like eating animals. But I think that's what I mean. It's representative of the whole spectrum of people, but so many people, it makes them think, right? And it's neat to see that on video.
Yeah, I think it's great. And I think even if you don't see it, just the publicity it's getting, they're showing the ads in the papers, online. So even if you don't ride transit, you're being exposed to it, which is wonderful. It was already also in the Calgary Herald, which is impressive.
And it's my Facebook cover photo.
Oh, awesome.
So, and once I put it up last week, a whole bunch of other people followed suit and copied my picture. So I gave them that idea. And you guys should do it too. It's nice. It's a really nice, banner that you can have up there.
Okay, perfect. Maybe I'll change mine as well. Awesome. So that's news from my end.
Great. Thanks, Cynthia, for that. So for today's interview, we'll be speaking with Laura Lee Shaw about an organization that she's involved with, Stop UBC Animal Research, and their current campaigns. We'll also talk about the Battery Cage Rescue Hens that she provides a home for and how the rescue works. Hello, Laura Lee, and thanks for joining us.
Well, and thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh, you're welcome. Could you start by telling me about how you became involved with Stop UBC Animal Research and what in particular compelled you to become involved in this issue?
Thank you. I was already involved with the ADAV, which is a very long-running group here in Vancouver. It was started by a veterinarian in 1926, and that stands for the Animal Defense Anti-Vivisection. And the idea of UBC and their research was brought to our group, and it just seemed a natural fit. So the group Stop UBC Animal Research was formed under the ADAV umbrella.
Great. And can you share some of Stop UBC's most recent campaign ideas? I know I recently saw a video on YouTube, and just some perhaps some things that they're currently working on as well.
Absolutely. Jeepers, you know, in some ways it's been a quieter spring, and in others it's been action-packed. We did the Pet Expo, which is a bit of an unusual event because you do have breeders, you have people there for profit, but you also have animal supporters and animal lovers. And we took our literature we had over the autumn and Christmas season, two very large bus shelter ads just outside UBC's gates on West 10th, and we were able to take one of those with us and put it on display. People were horrified. They had no idea. I mean, the people that show attracts are not necessarily animal activists. They're very mainstream. It was at the Peony, and that was probably some of our best reactions from people and the outrage that they felt. We've done, most recently we did a demonstration out front of the art gallery during the week to support and bring awareness to animals in laboratories. We had three speakers there, and we just kept the speakers talking. We had microphones, we had literature, we gave out countless pieces of information, and we did get 18 and a half pages signed from people supporting on our petition to get the most invasive experiment stopped at UBC. We will be doing the Veg Fest that's coming up. Alumni Week is coming up. In fact, if people check Facebook or they can call me, we'd love to get more people involved in Alumni Week. And we believe we're going to be doing the Folk Festival, which, again, will introduce us to a whole new audience. I mentioned our bus shelter ads, and they were very powerful. The company was so supportive of us. They left one ad up for 4.5 months, which had to have gotten a lot of attention. And the picture on it is a picture from the actual labs at UBC, so it's just heart-wrenching. We also, in the spring, had Dr. Olivier Berreville come out from Manitoba, and he did a tour of schools and universities. We did have meetings with UBC representatives, and we gave them a petition that we had online and still have it up, in fact, if people want to search it out and sign it. It's on Care 2. That has over 13 or 14,000 signatures on it, so it's powerful as well. And that's been our spring.
It sounds like very, very busy spring, but that's great that you're getting all the word out there. And those bus ads, I've seen them, and they are very powerful and very heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And I know that many people tend to be surprised that animal research is going on right at UBC, and particularly their use of primates in research, which, you know, is what the bus ad somewhat focuses on. What do you find to be the most common responses from people when you share this information?
Well, it's certainly utter shock and disbelief. They can't believe this is happening on their own back door, and that their tax dollars are going to pay for it as well. I believe UBC is the second largest animal research facility in Canada, and they've just built a new primate center. They've already been cited by the CCAC, which is the Canadian Council on Animal Care, for treatment of their animals last year. They don't seem to care. They just keep on going. But I tell you, people are horrified. Mainstream people, not even just the animal activists, but people that they go home and pet their cat and dog, and they think of other animals being locked in labs, terrified, frightened, and in pain. And it really speaks to them. So I believe we're making headway.
Laura Lee, you say that people's tax dollars are going to pay for these invasive experiments and this research. Perhaps that's another angle that could be pursued in the advertising about what's going on, is, you know, because some people, you know, different people are affected different ways. And I don't know if people really think about that. Like, I don't, like, oh, my tax dollars are going towards this, and that affects me, right? So, because other people might be just sort of disconnected from, oh, it's just animals, but it's actually their money going towards this. So just a suggestion out there, like, that's, yes, that's another angle to pursue, maybe, because, you know, money speaks.
Yes, and we have a campaign that is in the works right now and that's a good idea to add that to some of our information that we're going to be sharing with the public, and just point out to them that your dollars are going here. You are supporting it. Grants are one of the biggest things that keep universities running. And they apply for grants. I mean, animal research brings them money. And we need to stop that. We need to sever that financial supply.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to ask you, kind of as an addition to that last question, are UBC students in general supportive of your work, or are some of them kind of against it? What kind of response do you get from them?
Oh, the students themselves, many of them, many are very supportive. Even some of the kids that work in the animal research areas, they're supportive. And the union for the folks out there that do the cleaning and the, I guess, some of the care and management of the animals, they too support us. They endorsed us on their website and on their Facebook page, which was very, very good of them. The students have created an animal rights group, and if people want to contact us, we can certainly put them in contact with those students. And any students that might be listening to this, they too need support, and just to keep the group strong and get at UBC from that angle as well, that, listen, your students don't even appreciate it.
Great. And can you share some of the alternative methods of research without animals that are available? And why do you feel there's still so much resistance to these methods?
Well, one of the simpler methods would be human trials, of course. But they can do models from cells and in petri dishes. They can do computer modeling. There's so many ways. In India, they're no longer using animals in their labs. Number one, it's expensive. But I think the resistance to changing and to any change is the basis of that is money. The grant money that they get from doing these research projects, that brings money into UBC, and UBC loves money. UBC, I've been told, stands for You Bring Cash.
That's so true. You know,
and it is so true. And like most things, it's a huge industry unto itself, where you've got the breeders, you've got people that are manufacturing feed, cage manufacturers, the transportation industry. Animals in research, it's a huge moneymaker for a lot of people, and they're not going to let that go without a fight.
Laura Lee, you're speaking of sort of some of the information about animal research here and alternative methods, and it made me think of the Truisms video that has come out recently on behalf of Stop UBC Animal Research. Can you talk about that and how our listeners can view that video? It's a really excellent video.
Yes, and the short version is on our website, which is stopubcanimalresearch.org. And please do go to that and view it. We're looking at doing some screenings where we would have the longer version available as well. That was kindly put together by Dan Murphy, and it's extremely powerful. It gives you the information without the more dramatic pictures and things. I mean, there's pieces in it, but you could show it to most anyone, and yet it explains what the university wants us to believe, yet what is the truth. Like Vioxx, 140,000 people died after it had been tested on animals and proved to be safe. And some of the researchers say, well, we didn't test it on enough animals. Yes, you did. It's just animal models don't work. They are different from us. The video itself has several different points in it about what they've done for testing and what doesn't work on animals does work on people, and vice versa. Things like if they'd ever tested chocolate on dogs, we wouldn't have chocolate in our lives. Aspirin would kill a cat, and yet it cures headache for people. We're different species.
Mm-hmm. And what a world that would be without chocolate. Could you imagine?
I can live without aspirin, but boy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd go for chocolate.
Absolutely.
Jackie, let's post that video on our Facebook.
It is on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. That is a very powerful video and very, very important for everybody to see.
And we'd love for people to share it.
Exactly.
Send it around to everyone they know. And send it to corporations. Mm-hmm. If you happen to have any contacts, or if you have an evening free where you can just go through, look up UBC, look at who some of their supporters are financially, and fire that off to them. Send them a link and say, hey, have you seen this?
Yeah.
You know, it may ring a few bells for people and get some of their funding cut.
Absolutely. And how can people help or get involved with Stop UBC Animal Research?
Well, thanks. Again, if they go to our website, we're always looking for volunteers. One in particular we need right now, or a couple of people, would be folks that can do grant applications. They're time-consuming, they require, you know, quite a bit of dedication, but they can be ever so rewarding to helping us get the animals out of the labs. That funds things like the bus shelter ads and our printed material that we give out. They can come and participate in our peaceful demonstrations. Everything we do is law-abiding, and we can't stress that enough, but we need people, for example, on May 25th to come out for the UBC Alumni Weekend. They can donate. You know, if they don't have time, if they're not close by to Vancouver, you can donate on the website. You could put a penny collecting jar at your veterinarian's office. We can give you labels for it and gather pennies for us for the next few months. Many groups are doing that, and it actually turns out to be quite profitable. So those are some ideas, and they're always welcome to contact us. You can email info@stopubcanimalresearch.org. Okay?
Great. Mm-hmm. And now on a bit of a different theme, as it is International Respect for Chickens Month, I just want to ask you about your hen companions. Can you please tell me about where these chickens came from and what their past lives were like?
Well, I've got now 3 rescue hens. I did have 4. One sadly passed away last February, a year ago February. They came from northern Alberta, and they were brought out on a rescue of about 200 hens out of 2,000 that were being slaughtered. In industry, the battery cage hen, they live 4 to a cage that's 1 foot by 1 foot by 1 foot, and they're in there for a year. At the end of 1 year, they're no longer viable economically for the egg producers, because they go into a molt twice a year, and at the second molt, when they stop laying because they're changing over their feathers, industry, they just killed them. So these girls were part of a group that were rescued, and it was quite a brutal rescue, where the people doing the actual rescuing had to go onto the farm where they slaughtered them themselves and just pretend that they were taking them live to go home and slaughter and use them as fertilizer. And so they had to have just sort of locked tongues and a stomach of steel, because they were watching this brutal, brutal treatment of these birds being thrown into cages and dumped into their truck for them to drive away with. And they had to pretend they had no feelings toward them, otherwise they were afraid that they wouldn't be allowed to take the hens. So that's where they came from. It's a horrible life, and I'd like to say that I think they're enjoying themselves much more now.
That's so great that you were able to provide a home for them. I'm really, especially after that story, that's really impactful and really makes you think.
And Laura Lee, you live here in the city of Vancouver, is that correct?
Yes, I do. And in Vancouver, you're allowed to have 4 hens. When I got mine, they were still contraband. However, those rules have changed, and now we're allowed to have them. The city does want you to register them, and that may be so they can track any disease. Like when the bird flu came over and they rounded up all the birds in the Lower Mainland and Fraser Valley and just slaughtered them all. So people may want to think as to whether they register or not. I'm not at all saying you shouldn't, but it's something to think about. And my birds have been great. They've been fun. They're fine. Initially, they have adjustment periods, and one of my birds had to be separated. She was pecking the others, and she decided to bond with me. And so she's so sweet, and she's ill right now. Often these birds die of uterine cancer, because I'm told
the heavy toll that all this egg production takes on them. So, in fact, this afternoon she's going back to the vet and she'll have an implant so that she no longer ovulates to try and take some of that stress away from her body. She won't produce eggs any longer.
And what kind of home environment would best suit these rescue hens? Is it better to have a large backyard, a barn, a quiet area for them to stay? And for their well-being, is it best for people to adopt individuals or a group of hens?
Well, I would say groups, because they're very social, and they are always part of a flock, and they have sort of a pecking order where there'll be a top hen and a lower hen, and they like the friendship and companionship, so definitely a group. A home environment, I think that they can make a home out of just about anywhere. They do need a little bit of room, and if they can have access to soil and scratching, that just enriches their lives. And people are welcome to contact me and come over and see what we've worked out for them. They have just a wonderful environment. It's not huge, but if I may say, I would always rescue rather than go to a breeder. The same as with dogs, cats, anything. The hens that people get and they're tired of them or they don't realize, they are quite a bit of work. You have to be pretty dedicated toward their lives and enriching them. So the SPCA always ends up with hens, different rescue groups. There's, I'm sure, always a girl in need of a home rather than supporting a breeder who keeps the female hens and the little boys. There's several ways that they're killed, but it's within moments of hatching that they either are gassed or suffocated or chopped up alive. So please try to not get carried away with the cute hens and breeders and go for rescue.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned earlier that there was a bit of an adjustment period with one of your girls. Can you share, like, what can adoptive caregivers do to help the chickens in their adjustment to their new life? And what can be some of the expected challenges or behaviors of these rescues?
Okay, thanks. In terms of their environment, like most little animals, if they have places to hide and just sort of get away, I think they're far better off than just an open area with no interesting features and nowhere to sort of dodge the bullet if another one of the hens decides they're going to peck them. So my girls have little boxes or different levels that they can sort of scoot away to. And that, I think, works very well. Their adjustment, when they came to me, they were emaciated. They had no feathers. Their necks are still bare from reaching through the wire cage to feed. But they needed to be warm. They needed to be just talk to calmly. And I tried to talk to them as much as I could. And unlimited food and water, let them know that they don't have to fight for anything any longer, that they're in a safe environment. And they do adjust, and yep, some of them will peck the others. Most of them have been debeaked, which is in itself just a horrible practice. But after a period of time, I was able to reunite my single hen with her sisters. I put them into an entirely new pen, so that there wasn't any territorial issues, because they are territorial, like any animal or person, and it's worked out really well.
Great, and thanks so much for sharing all this. How can people get involved, whether they want to provide a home or assist in rescues or just help out in other ways?
Sure. One of my friends has an email address. She does rescue battery hens whenever she has homes for them, and the homes do need to be vegetarian or vegan because she doesn't want any of the hens to end up on a plate as well. But the email address for that is lovebatteryhens, hens is plural, @hotmail.com. So lovebatteryhens@hotmail.com. And she can arrange to get birds from the Fraser Valley that are being slaughtered, and she'll get them off to you. We can certainly give you as much support as possible with ideas on pen building or how to look after them. There's many, many different websites that one can go to. Karen Davis has UnitedPoultryConcerns.org, and she's wonderful. She's a wealth of information. She's dedicated her life to chickens and rescuing and helping them and trying to get people to understand that they're very intelligent animals, and yet they're probably the most abused animal on earth.
We should put that email address on our website, Jackie, for people who want to contact that person.
Absolutely.
And I just wanted to point out, too, is that people who live in Vancouver or other urban areas that actually allow having these quote-unquote backyard chickens, people bring them in for eggs, but this is actually a really good way to actually rescue farmed animals. You might think that you can't do that because you live in a city, right? And you do have a little backyard, but I can't have farmed animals. I can't do that kind of rescue. I don't have a farm sanctuary, but you can actually do that with hens in Vancouver. And I know there's other cities that allow that too. So I just wanted to point that out and emphasize like that's possible. You can save some lives.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Loralee, for joining us on the show and for sharing all this information both about Stop UBC Animal Research and about your wonderful rescue hens and, you know, how they came to be with you. For more info about Stop UBC Animal Research, please check out stopubcanimalresearch.org. And for more information or to ask questions about battery cage rescue hens, I guess please contact Love Battery Hens. @hotmail.com, and just you can ask questions there. And yes, thank you.
Thanks, Loralee.
Thank you very much. And again, folks are welcome to come over and see my girls and just check it out and see if it's something that they think they would like to get involved in.
I think I will have
to come and volunteer.
I will have to take you up on that.
Please do. I can be reached through Stop UBC Animal Research.
Thanks, Loralee.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Please join us on next week's show. That's May the 24th, where we will be featuring an interview on the first annual Resistance Ecology Conference. It's happening the first weekend of June in Portland, Oregon. The conference, which is grounded in animal and earth liberation, advocates for a movement of resistance that is multi-layered, unified, diverse, and intersectional. Featured at the conference will be acclaimed authors and activists Will Potter, Lauren Ornelas, Breeze Harper, Patrice Jones, and more. We here at the Animal Voices show modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. You can do so by signing up on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Also, please do check out our website, www.animalvoices.org, where our shows can also be downloaded from. And if you appreciate the work that we do here every week at Animal Voices to bring you original quality programming on the topics of current animal issues and the vegan lifestyle, please show us your support by making a donation to us at Animal Voices at Co-op Radio. We do rely on your donations to keep the show on the air. You can do that simply by going to cooperadio.org and click on Donate to Co-op Radio. We really appreciate it. We're closing the show with local Vancouver artist Carol Cox's song, Angel of the Sea, which is a song for the dolphins in honor of those at Marineland. Stay tuned now for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Translucent sea flowing all around me. I believe your energy called out to mine. You're so divine. And as I watch you, I'm amazed how any man could sell his soul and raise. phrases and to force your silence for eternity. As I swim deeper into myself, I understand, as the tide must come to land, so I must free you, my angel of the sea. And